What's good, world? It's your boy Pete Walsh, aka Lamborghini Petey.
Lamborghini Petey, baby.
Episode 40.
Is it 40?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
The Sean Kemp episode. I got my boy Abe Schwadron with me as always. Abe, how you feeling?
Yep. Abraham Lincoln bio, aka Abraham, whose man's is this? Ready to roll, man. We got a special guest in the building.
Very special guest. Long overdue. We tried to do this a little bit over the summer, and then, you know, things just got busy. But friend of the program, friend of Slam Magazine, Brooklyn's own, Coney Island's own, Jamel Thomas. Jamel, how you feeling, man?
I'm good, baby. Thanks for having me.
So it's been kind of customary that our guests throw in their own AKA nowadays. So you got an AKA for us?
I mean, you know, my name is 530.
530?
Yeah, that's my name.
Wait, so for people who don't know, explain where that came from.
530, it comes from, actually, Steph's older brother gave it to me, Juju.
Okay.
You know, I was in the streets when I was younger, so I used to come in 5:30 in the morning, even on a school night. So, you know, it was something negative. And then once I started, you know, pursuing basketball seriously, I turned into a positive, and I just started waking up at 5:30 in the morning to work out, you know, before school started. So, you know. I changed the negative to a positive.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. Tight.
And I mean, before we jump into everything else, I just have to say, without sounding like too much of a fanboy here, so for me, like, my introduction to Jamel was, I mean, Through the Fire came out in 2005. I think it was like 15 years old.
Yes. Yeah.
I love that documentary so much that I, like, signed up to be on, like, the street team to pass out flyers for the movie, I'm sorry. Like, in my high school, I was, like, handed flyers out. I was writing in the school paper about it, knowing nothing about you or your brother. So for me, this is super cool to be able to talk to you and stuff. And I'm sure, you know, there's a whole generation before myself that, you know, knows you for you and all your accomplishments. But that was kind of my introduction to you. So how many people still talk to you about that film and sort of meeting you through that?
Well, I just want to say thanks for putting it out there. You know, we appreciate that. But a lot of people always talk about it. They, you know, people hit me in my inbox now to this day, like, talking about how can they get overseas and play basketball. Like, I think what the movie did for a lot of players that, you know, they know their chances were slim making it to the NBA. They gave them, it gave them hope to play overseas. So a lot of cats ask me, hey, yo, how I get to play overseas? You know, any agents in Italy, Greece, Turkey, whatever? I was like, you know, just send me a... Like, I look out for everybody. You know, I try it, and I send it to the guys that I know. If it works out, it works out. If it don't, it don't. But I remember when Eugene Lawrence, when he came out of St. John's, you know, he didn't have no direction, nowhere to go. He reached out to me. He was like, hey, Five, I need some help. I want to go play overseas. And right away, I got him contacted with my Italian agent, and he took care of Eugene. And Eugene's still playing to this day. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself in terms of your career path, but – that the thing that stood out just from that, before we move on, like, just how damn good you have to be even to play overseas, like, you know, yourself, like, leading scorer in the Big East and illustrious college career. And, you know, there was kind of that scene where you and Bassey are working out, and it just showed, like, you got to be a beast even to make it over there and to have a successful career over there. Like, it's kind of what you're saying, I guess, is, like, you got to understand that as a player coming out.
Yeah, you got to put the work in. You can't just say, I want to go play somewhere. You didn't put the work in.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, my whole family, we've been putting work in for years. Like, we credit out my older cousin, Eric Marbury, for starting and, you know, laying down the first brick. But since then, you know, we've just been putting in a lot of work. And whatever I learned, I give it to Sebastian. Sebastian, whatever he learned, he give it to Ethan. And Ethan got to take care of my son when, you know, he gets of age. So that's how it is. You got to pass it down.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, I guess going all the way back, you know, you're telling us a little bit about, you know, your AU team and when you were a kid. And, like, I mean, for people who don't know, Jamel is just, like, one of the probably best high school basketball players to come out of definitely Lincoln, definitely out of New York. Went to Providence after led the Big East in scoring, played overseas for years and years and years. But yeah, like, I feel like you've probably seen it all, like, in the New York area as far as high school basketball and prospects coming out. So, you know, why don't you just tell us a little bit about the AU team? I know you played for the Gauchos back in the day. It was like you and Steph and all those guys, right?
Yeah, we were stacked. We played for the Gauchos back in Actually, my first AAU team was the Broncos.
Mm-hmm.
I played with the Broncos for one season, and then the next year I played with the Gauchos. Steph got me to the Gauchos.
Okay.
Like Stephon was, he was like the mini king of New York. Like he can get stuff done. Like he was like, you know, Five, you're coming with me. You're going to play at the Gauchos. All right, cool. So I went to go play with the Gauchos. It was me, Steph, Shamgard, Felipe, Gordon Malone, Charleston Clark,
Eric Harris. How did that team ever lose a game?
Hashimu Evans. How would we lose a game? Because sometimes when you go to Vegas and you've never been there.
Wait, it's actually funny you say that because we usually go to Vegas once a year for like they have like all their sneaker events out there. So we go at the end of August or in the middle of July. And one of the big takeaways is like how many like 16-year-old super tall kids are just walking around the strip at like 2 o'clock in the morning with no direction. I'm like, man.
And we're from New York.
Yeah.
City that never sleeps. So you go to Vegas, like this it's another city like us. But you know, you see females out there like
I mean, this is again funny you mentioned it because I just texted Peter the other night the scene from the Lenny Cook documentary where he goes to Vegas and it's the same thing where the next day the coach is like, man, it'd be really nice if Lenny was here. I don't know where he is. So I guess the Vegas trips explains it. But yeah, so that team was stacked, obviously.
Yeah, we lost in the championship to we called him Plastic Man in high school, Maceo Bastion.
Okay.
This guy was dunking from the free throw line. We was like, this guy is just like Plastic Man. Like, he was, like after we finished playing, if they played right after us, we'll stay around just to, you know, watch him play. Like, Maceo Bastion was, like, unbelievable in high school. Like, his hops were crazy. But Felipe, you know, he was our Michael Jordan. The reason why we lost, Felipe is my guy. He's a good guy. I love him to death. I'm going to put this story out there. The reason why we lost is because one time we were having fun in the pool in the hotel. So Felipe jumps in the pool butt naked. And they kicked us out the hotel. So we were all sleeping in vans.
Wait, in the middle of the summer in Vegas?
And it was hot.
Oh,
it was,
my God.
It was the worst. It was the worst. They kicked us out, and, you know, Lou Dalmeida, the guy that owned Gauchos at the time, or I'm not sure if he still owns it. He said, you guys just have to sleep in the van.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were pretty pissed
off.
Where
did he sleep?
He slept in a room.
Oh.
Yeah, he didn't sleep in the
room. So he didn't, like, put you guys on the floor or anything?
No, he slept in the hotel. We got kicked out, the players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've bumped into Felipe a handful of times just at, like, Nick games and random Nick events, and still one of, like, the nicest guys, like, such an ambassador for the game for New York, man. Always love bumping into Felipe. But yeah, I mean, and then after high school, you went to Providence, and you were recruited possibly by the craziest man I ever met, who is Bobby Gonzalez.
Also a friend of the program.
Friend of the program.
Bobby G.
Super nice guy.
What
super
was he like
intense
as a
guy.
Recruiter?
Yeah.
He was talkative.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no shit.
The thing is, like, he can talk all day, you know. Sometimes when a guy like that talks, you have selective hearing. Right. So I was just, when he brought up Shamgard name, then I paid attention. I was like, oh, Shamgard is coming too? He's going to come? I was like, all right. And then he started talking about, yeah, you know, Jamel, because, you know, I'm from New York. And, you know, I've been to juniors. I ate the cheesecake. I ate it before they named it Marbury. And then he'll say something about D Flight. He's like, I was like, oh, Derek Brown is going to come too? Mm-hmm. I was like, well, you know, I'm all in. I just had to, you know, pass it through with my parents. And actually, they kind of made the decision for me. But Bobby G was my guy, man. He still is my guy.
Yeah. Well, see, that was going to be my question, too, is like, I mean, you're many years removed from it, but you've been around several, you know, recruiting processes through your family. Sorry. Like, what are you listening to? Like, what are the things that when a coach is sitting in your living room or whatever, like, what are the key parts that, like, some of it you're probably ignoring, whatever, it's just coach speak. What are the parts that are truly, like, important, at least in the few recruiting processes you've been around?
Well, especially with Sebastian's situation, you know, he was a unique kid. You always want a coach that's going to be, like, nurturing, you know, towards him. You know, I didn't grow up with a father, you know, my father was in and out of jail, so you know, we kind of had to, you know, be men ourselves, you know, and whatever, like, my mother taught us. But that, you know, that's one of the main things I look for, like, is the coach is genuine enough to take my little brother in? Is he going to, like, make sure, like, he's going to get, you know, the proper grades to graduate on time? Like, Ethan right now, he's on pace to graduate. That's a good coach he has down in Idaho State. Yeah. Very good coach. He's like my old high school coach, Bobby Hartstein. He's like a realist. And you always want the player to have some freedom to play. Like, don't have him play like a robot. You know, sometimes it happens when you go to college. It happened to Maurice Brown when he went to St. John's. Mm-hmm. And we saw that. Like, Maurice was like, he was the king of Coney Island. Like, when after my freshman year, when he was a senior, like, he was like our little Michael Jordan at 5'8".
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? The way he was maneuvering his body in the air and, you know, was able to make layups over guys that were 7 feet or guys his size. So when he went to St. John's, we was like, what the hell is going on?
Right.
So we were conscious at that time, like, you have to go to the right school.
Yeah.
Right? So, and there's other things you look for in a coach, but, you know, that's basically it.
And then, I mean, at Providence, like, so different from New York. I mean, that's probably the understatement of the year. But, you know, how did you, like, were you comfortable there? Like, when you first got there, you were like, oh, hell no, I got to get out of here? Or, you know, what's a change of pace good for you think?
Well, the thing is, I was recruited by a lot of schools. Mm-hmm. Every school in the country that I was recruiting Steph was recruiting me because our relationship.
Yeah. Right.
They used to say, well, we'll throw Thomas in there with you if you come, you know what I'm saying? So it was UCLA, Syracuse, even Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
But Stephon's father, he stopped that. He was like, no, you're going to get out of his shadow. You're going to go, you know, to your own school. So what happened with Providence was I had two schools listed on to visit, Rutgers and Providence. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people don't know I was raised by a Jewish couple, like, since I was 15 years old. My English teacher, that's a whole nother story. But I went to Rutgers for a visit. Charles Jones was my host. Mm-hmm. It's my boy. He's from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I used to love Charles. I used to see him play back in the park in, when he was in high school. So first day there, Charles took me to a party. I have a ball. Like, I'm talking about I have a ball. I have, like, the time of my life. It was like some he got game tight. So I went home to my parents. They was like, how you like, you know, the visit? I was like, oh, it was the best. It was the best. Oh, I want to go there. And then they said there was a lot of black people there. I was like, yeah, I want to go there. Rutgers is an hour away
from
Coney Island. I was like, all right. She was like, okay. Now, next week we're going to go to Providence. So I go to Providence. Jason Murdoch was my host. Not really exciting.
Not
he wasn't from Brooklyn. You know, he's from Jersey. You know how Brooklyn guys, we so loyal to our people.
Right.
So he took me to, like, the wackest party ever. and everything shut down over there at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
So I was like, this is not life. This is not life. So it was bored as hell. I was bored as hell. So I went back home, told my parents. I said, they're like, how you like the visit? I was like, oh, I hated it. It was just boring. It was nothing to do. All right. A week later, she was like, well, that's the school you're going to. Because I needed to focus.
Yeah.
Oh,
I need, it. You know, if I would have been at Rutgers, I probably would have possibly got kicked out the first year or something like that. Been all over the place. Probably got fat, wasn't focused.
Yeah, right.
But that was the right decision for me to, you know, go to Providence.
Yeah. I mean, you guys had a hell of a team, too, man. Yeah. I mean, you, Sham, Austin Crozier. I'm trying to think who else was on that squad. Derek Brown, who you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, what was that like? What year did you guys go to the tournament? When you played Arizona, right? When they won a championship?
Yeah, 97.
97. So what was that tournament run like for you guys?
It was probably one of the best experiences I ever experienced at that, you know, time of my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I enjoy, like, going to Hawaii with the Gauchos and stuff, but that experience alone right there, you know, we were underdog and you playing with guys you actually love and care for.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't playing where, like, they recruited this guy from Boston, mm-hmm. the other guy from, you know, Connecticut, another guy from California. I grew up with Flight. I idolized him when I was younger. Sham, he was my teammate. And with the Gauchos, Corey Wright is another guy. He was a point guard that played for Brandeis. He was like a brother to me because we used to go to Harlem all the time, Steph and I, to go see, you know, Sham, Corey, and even Skip at times. And I said Sham, right?
Yes.
So mm-hmm. So at that time, you're playing with guys you love, and we all protecting each other. But like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
We trust each other on defense. So if I get beat, D-Flat, you got me. You know what I'm saying? So it was like that. And then we had Austin. Like, he was like the great white hope. Like, the guy, his footwork was amazing. He was just, like, so poised with the ball. And he was like, you know, coach let him do kind of whatever what he wanted to do, but he played the right way. Like, so it was just like – and then, like, after we beat Duke, like, we knew we were going to beat Duke. We knew that. They couldn't match our, like, intensity.
Yeah.
Like, just – we just, like, D-Flight, he had 31 that game, something like
was
that.
Was that, like, Trajan Langdon and those guys?
Trajan Langdon, Wojciechowski.
Boozer? No. Boozer was later.
Yeah. Rashawn McCloud.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, and then when we went back to college campus and we seen all the fans, like coming there to greet us, and it was just, like, an amazing experience. Yeah. It was just amazing. That was, like, one of the best times of my life.
Are they doing anything that was – this is the 20th anniversary this year, right?
They did a 15-year anniversary 5 years ago.
Okay.
So they brought all the guys back to Providence, and the only guy that wasn't there was, I think, Austin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Ruben was there. And D-Flight wasn't there. Derek Brown, he wasn't there. So it was a good experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
When you kind of watch, like, college ball now, are there teams that remind you of a team like that, where teams trust each other, or do you feel like maybe some of that's lost because of one and done rule, stuff like that?
Yeah, that's there's a lot of stuff that's lost. That's gone. Yeah, I mean, we knew it was a business at the time, like, we were conscious of it, but we didn't walk around like it. Mm-hmm. Like, we enjoyed the game, we wanted to play all the time. Now it's pretty obvious, like, these kids, like, this is a business. I'm here for I don't even want to be a friend that long. I'm here for 7 months, and that's it. Yeah. I'm out.
I mean, like, the business aspect of it is, like, trickled down to high school even more so nowadays, too. And I'm curious, like, for someone, you know, all the names you mentioned, like yourself, Steph, Shamgott, D. Brown, you know, all these guys were such great New York high school players. Like, nowadays you see a lot of the top NYC players going to, like, a prep school in New England, like, they rarely want to stay in New York. Like, do you know maybe why that changed, when the shift happened? I've been curious. I've been trying to figure this out.
I can't put a thing on it. I know one problem is a lot of AAU teams. Like, you'll have possibly one good kid on one AAU team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I played, it was 4 AAU teams: the Gauchos, Riverside, Long Island Lightning. Panthers, the Panthers at the time, and the Broncos. So you had to fight for a spot, or you had to be good to play on those teams. So you played with good players, and you got better playing with good players. Now, these guys, when you don't play with good players, you're not getting better.
Yeah.
Unless you're working on your own and you got, like, a real good trainer. But kids is not just getting better in New York, because everything is so spread out. It's like we're not together like how we used to be when I was growing up, you know. So that's why they go into, like, a school in Connecticut or New Jersey or even Massachusetts or Maine. They have those AAU teams, and they be stacked.
Yeah.
Like, they stacked over there.
Yeah. So are you still training kids in the New York area? So yeah. I don't know. I mean, so – like, do you get that mentality from them a little bit, that, like, all right, I just, you know, I want to be out, like, the New York high school scene just isn't doing it for me now, or most kids you train in Jersey now?
No, I do both. Yeah. It's just, you know, sometimes, you know, kids, it's hard to really push them to that limit. Like, I used to train Bassey for 5 hours a day.
Yeah.
Like, literally, like, Monday through Friday. Draining 5 hours. Like, we would run the beach, run the stairs, calisthenics, do some basketball drills, maybe eat in the middle of it. Like, the other trainer that I had, Andrew Amigo, he used to bring chicken and peanuts, bananas, and oranges. So you can't leave. So eat while you're working out.
Yeah,
you know, you can recover like that. And then after that, we'll go play basketball for 2 hours. Like, I used to have him play with me with the pros, with, like, Anthony Mason, God bless, Mark Jackson, and, you know, guys like that. So these guys, you know, you got to train them. They their bodies is not really
developed
like that to train for a long period of time, and then, you know, they can't do 2 hours. It's hard to do 2 hours with them.
Yeah,
it's hard to do 2 hours, and 2 hours is nothing.
I mean, to me, that's a long time. I guess if you want to play pro volley, that's what the sacrifice
is. I mean, a warm up is 30 minutes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So. You've been following the Jelly Fam movement at all?
Oh, yeah. I like the kid, Isaiah. Yeah. I like the kid. Yeah. He looks up to my young boy, Isaiah Whitehead.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, so they're really cool. Yeah. I like him. Hopefully, I'll check him out, you know, before the season's over.
Yeah.
But he's doing pretty good over
there. Yeah, he's doing well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all right, well, I mean, I think as long as you're here, we should also get kind of some NBA thoughts out of you, because I know, you know, you follow the league pretty closely.
Yeah.
One guy I know that you are a fan of, just based off following your social media stuff, you're a big Isaiah Thomas fan, right?
Oh, yeah. That's my guy. I like
him. Your guy?
I like little guys.
Why is that your guy?
I mean, because he's overcoming every adversity that could be possibly thrown at him. Like, he went from playing really well in Sacramento and going to Phoenix when they had three other point guards there. He was like the fourth point guard, and he still was doing well over there. And he came over to Boston and being like the sixth man. Now he's starting. Like, he's showing you like he's a superstar.
And he's averaging 30, almost 30 a night.
No,
yeah.
29 is 30.
Okay, 30 a night.
Ball players, when your ball player, 29 is 30. You can't say I had 29 on somebody. No, I had 30. Yeah, Isaiah Thomas, I like that kid. That kid is a superstar. Like, I mean, him or Westbrook is my MVP right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, you know, Lance is in the news, working out for the Cavs. So, you know, I guess, I don't know how much you stay in touch with him, but, you know, we're obviously huge fans of Lance and Slam. Mm-hmm. And I mean, just in general, NBA fandom, we've always loved Lance. So, you know, I mean, it sucked what happened to him in New Orleans, but, like, what's his mindset now? Like, is he ready to come back? Like, are teams looking at him?
Yeah, I spoke to him maybe, like, 3 days ago, three or 4 days ago. I just asked him how his body feeling.
Yeah.
He said his body feeling good. Yeah, I think he was at Impact. He was training, you know.
Out of Vegas? Right?
Yeah, sometimes you go away, you get focused, you get the lock in.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you're back home trying to train, it just – not going to work out. You need to go somewhere, focus, lock in.
Even in Vegas, though?
Yeah. I mean, because if you're in New York, you know everybody, and everybody know you, right? They can come to your hotel, say what's up. You know, they can delay your workout.
Right.
You go over there, you go get your, you know, 2-3 hours in, and then you go do, you know, have your little personal life or whatever. Yeah. But he's doing well. He's upbeat.
Good.
He said his body feels strong, and I'm happy for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to see him play. That's what he loves basketball.
Yeah.
This kid loves basketball. He's like one of the few Coney Islands that love basketball. Not what basketball can do for him.
Yeah.
He loves to play basketball.
Man, I love – I just like – he's just a man. Lance is just a man.
Yeah.
Like, looking back at, you know – I think that's the perfect way to describe it. It's like you can tell he just loves ball, and like he loves the competitive, you know, spirit of it, and just like digging at guys. Like, I don't know, I love watching Lance play.
Mm. Yeah.
All right. So, speaking of the Cavs, how much are you following of this LeBron James, Charles Barkley back and forth?
Oh, I follow. I post some stuff on social media about that. Yeah.
So give us your thoughts. So whose side are you on?
I'm on LeBron's side.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm on LeBron's side. You know, just the fact that, just like I said on social media, I said you can't be the face of the NBA and be the punching bag at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you gotta fight back. So what LeBron said is like, it's like that bully always picking on you in school, and then you know you're going home, don't push up, you're getting ready, you're getting prepared for that moment. LeBron just hit him with a knockout punch. That's it.
Yeah.
Whatever he said, if it wasn't true, then somebody should say something. But if it's true. Okay, so I'm going with LeBron. They're both like, well, right, but you can't call somebody a punk and
say he's whining like, and all that.
Yeah, whining, like, come on now, like, leave me alone.
I know. I mean, I feel like, you know, Chuck had his, you know, he had his time to shine in the NBA, like, as a player, and, you know, now he makes great money as an analyst, and I understand, like, it's his job to, you know, criticize people and you know, analyze the game and what he sees, but I mean, like you said, like, you can't the face of the NBA can't be the punching bag of the NBA as well. It makes no sense. Like, Mike never would have been attacked like that by analysts and the people.
And it's different. You know, you can't – sometimes you can't compare the players today to the players from back in the day. Mm-hmm. Everything's just more different. We live in a sensitive world right now.
Yeah.
Right. Everything is sensitive. So whatever you say, you can put it on social media and everybody can read it. Everybody know your feelings and everybody can say something directly towards you.
Yeah, look at Rondo's Instagram post from last week.
Yeah. Like, you know, it's just a sensitive world right now that we live in. Back then it was the struggle.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It was guys like Mike and, you know, Barkley and Steph and, you know, that paved the way. So guys can just kind of like walk into the NBA.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's a lot of guys that's an NBA. It's a lot of guys. Like, when we were growing up, I don't think we knew one person from New York that was in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably Kenny, and we didn't meet Kenny at the time.
Yeah.
Kenny, like, Anderson?
Yeah, Chips.
Yeah, so we didn't meet Kenny. So it was – now you got a lot of guys that play in the NBA. You can see Gary Forbes in the street. You can see – Eric Barkley somewhere. You can see Charles Jones somewhere. You see Felipe. You see a lot of, like, these kids can meet guys that actually play in the NBA. We didn't have that growing up. So it's just a different time right now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so give us your we were talking before we turned the mics on. Give us your Kyrie Irving speech as well. Because we know you're a big Kyrie guy too.
It's not that I'm a big Kyrie. It's just like what he's doing right now. It's just like he's having fun. He's like he's playing in a park.
Yeah.
Like he's playing at the highest level of basketball right now.
Yeah.
And he's making it look so easy, and he's doing whatever he wants out there. Yeah. And his handle is the best.
Best what?
The best what? I'm going, you know, Sham is my guy. I've been around Sham. I've been around Sham. I've been around Skip. You know what I'm saying? Steph was just a professional. He didn't really have a handle like that. He hit you with a crossover. He's just blowing by you. He was just a blow-by guy. I'm out playing with the ball. And we talked about AI. But Kyrie is doing it. He's taking some of AI stuff, taking some of Sham stuff, taking some of Skip stuff, and he's Kyrie.
Yeah. Like, I mean, his godfather's Rod Strickland, so he definitely taught him some stuff back in the day.
Yeah,
so.
Well, that's why you finish well.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Good call. Yeah.
So you're on record, Kyrie, best handles ever in the history of the NBA. Someone out there is going to be like, yo, Bob Cousy, man.
Nah, never.
Pete Maravich.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Pete. Yeah, on record today, I'm going with Kyrie.
All right, there it is.
Yeah.
Before you get out of here, you got to, you know, you mentioned struggle before. You're rocking the beautiful struggle gear right now. Yeah. So, you know, why don't you just tell us that's your clothing line.
Yes.
Why don't you just tell us a little bit about the beautiful struggle, how it got started, what you're doing with it, all that.
Well, it's a clothing line. It's an inspirational clothing line. It's actually a man and a boy in the picture. You know, I had a rough life growing up. Mm-hmm. My mother was murdered when I was 4 years old, so I kind of had to, like, guide myself and tell myself that everything is going to be all right to that little boy. You know what I'm saying? So I had to become my own man. I had to become my own father. You know, there's a ton of people that helped me, you know, help mold and shape, you know, to be the person that I am today. So, you know, a lot of people see the logo. They, you know, they think it's like a father and a son. So It's a lot of feedback. Like, people like, oh, is it a father and son clothing line? I'm like, it's a unisex clothing line.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's just, you know, it's the struggle. Like, you know, we made it out of the struggle, and that's why I got the ball in the back of my hand, because if it wasn't for that basketball, like, I don't know what I would have been, you know, today. So, the clothing line, you know, we're going to have a official launch sometime in May or early June, right before Father's Day.
Great.
Yeah, so we're working on that right now. I gave you a hat.
You did.
Got to get your hat.
Yeah, next time.
Yeah.
Looks very Cozy Boys approved, so, you know, we're ready for it. All right, one last question from me. I don't know if Pete has one too, but, I mean, you spend a lot of time playing overseas in what I have to assume are some pretty hostile environments over there, different arenas and stuff. So can you just give us one good, you know, overseas basketball story maybe that people from home don't understand about playing over in a Turkey or Italy?
A story, a basketball story. Let me see. I know in Greece it gets a little crazy out there, so you need protection. You need a lot of police officers around. Right.
We're talking like batteries being thrown on the court, stuff like that,
whatever is close to them. It could be a cell phone. It could be a shoe, bottle of water. Bottle of water is kind of regular because they try to get the game to slow down, especially if you like the away team and you playing it and the opposing team gym. Mm-hmm. You know, their fans, if we're beating them, they'll throw a bottle of water on the floor just to stop the game, to get us out the rhythm. Mm. Right, but
they should do that that should happen in NBA games, man.
Well, no. Hey, not? Jason Kidd tried to do that.
Actually,
once,
you know what? There's enough stoppages in the NBA game with like replays and timeouts and stuff that yeah we good on that actually.
They'll ban you like you will never go to a basketball game again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the fans here know that.
Yeah.
So but at the European experience is just fun. It's more fundamental basketball than, you know, like entertainment basketball. Like, you know, NBA is more entertainment. Over there is more like playing college. Yeah. The 3-point line is shorter. It's 4 quarters for 10 minutes. 10 minutes per quarter. It's a lot of fun. You just got to get used to it. Not everybody can deal with it because it's a different culture. Sometimes you go to Italy, especially in Milan, majority of people speak English. Mm-hmm. But you will go across a couple of people like, oh, no, it's speaking English. Like, just don't want to help you. Like,
that's
how it is. But, you know, I encourage, you know, everybody to, you know, get a chance to go play overseas. Yeah, take advantage of it. You know, Steph did it.
Yeah, still doing it.
Yeah, Steph did it. Yeah, he did it. Like, you got to take advantage of that because that's a whole different market. That's a whole different type of love out there. Mm. You don't get, you know how you get that love in New York?
Yeah.
It's that really is no love. You don't get that in New York. Like, they look at all the American players like they're just like mega stars.
Yeah.
Like, you're like a rock star out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, the last thing I want to ask was, you know, just from following you on Instagram, just seeing like you do a lot of, you know, community involvement and, you know, giving back and doing, you know, community organizations. So, you know, is that important to you, just as someone who made it and made it in basketball to come back and show face?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely important to me because it was done to me. Mm-hmm. Like my mentor, Mr. Lou, like I put, you know, his picture up on Instagram today. He was the one that showed me how to play basketball. Mm-hmm. And, I went to him one time. You know, he passed away back in 2007. I asked him one time, I said, how can you teach all these kids, me, Stefan, DeFlight, you know, a whole bunch of kids from Coney Island, how can you teach all of us how to play basketball and you have a wife at home and you have kids at home and you have a job? Like, how did you find that time to be with us? He just said, this is what I love to do.
Yeah.
So, it happened to me. So I feel like I got to, you know, live on his legacy and do what he've done. And I take pride in, you know, my neighborhood. Like, it's a lot of kids that's looking to play, like, junior college ball in my neighborhood right now. It's a kid named Naheem. I'm going to put his name out there.
Yeah.
Like, he's a little, you know, people said he's crazy in the head. But, you know, everybody got that reason when they're crazy. You got to understand them. You got to ask them, like, why are you crazy? So when you understand them, then you can help them, right? You decide if you want to help them or not.
Yeah.
So it's a kid like him. He's 6'8", about 21 years old. I'm going to try to get him in junior college and see what happens from there.
Yeah.
You know, it's important because you have younger kids that looks up to you, and sometimes they need direction. But if they make it, in whatever direction they're going, they can do the same thing that, you know, that I do.
Yeah.
You know, I get the police office involved and everything in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
I try to do as anything as possible that I can, you know, bring my neighborhood together. Like, you know, I am Coney Island. I love Coney Island.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I feel like, you know, the current climate of the United States, we need some more of that. So So yeah. Shout out to you, man.
It's important.
Yeah. All right, Jamel, we appreciate you. Where can people find you? Instagram, Twitter, all that.
Jamel530. Word. Instagram and Twitter.
Look out for the beautiful struggle. Yep. Again, we appreciate you coming through. Anything you need from us, just let us know, man. We're happy to help. And all the best, man. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot. Word.